It's time to get your shit together with the Gist of It podcast. The honest, straight-talking mental health and mindset podcast from Gist Coaching with your host, Chris Piercy.
Hi there, this is Chris Piercy with the Gist of It podcast. And joining me today is Sophie from Kooky Bloom. And she's a mum, she's an entrepreneur, she's a mental health advocate. And her story is one of almost fairy tale like proportions, I feel. finishing recently at a castle. So, you know, it kind of fits in. So how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm actually anxious. It's ironic, isn't it? I'm just a bit like, I don't know, when I knew we were going to be addressing it, it gives me that fluttery chest.
Yeah, it's one of those things you go, oh, I need to find something to be anxious about because I'm talking about anxiety. So your body just kind of does this whole response thing.
It's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically I've caused you anxiety. So sorry about that. My first question before anything else, before we dive into anything else, is can you believe your own success with everything that's going on?
No, I mean, I say this all the time. It's a classic imposter syndrome, massively. I still can't believe it every day when people, I can't believe it's me sometimes when I watch it back on stories or people order from me. It's really funny. I always say to my mum and my partner that I still got that kind of, that people are giving me the sympathy. So I worry about it. It's really stupid. I still think people are going, oh, bless her, look at her trying to sell her jewellery and like trying to help me out. It's a really weird, bizarre thought that always goes through my head. But yeah, no.
Thousands upon thousands of sympathy orders just to keep you going.
No, it's so silly, but yeah.
No, imposter syndrome is such an odd one because it's the sort of thing that you can go blissfully through life completely unaware of it. Mm-hmm. And then you'll find yourself in a scenario where maybe you just get a job promotion, or maybe you're in a new circle of friends, or maybe and all of a sudden you go, I'm not good enough to be associated with these people or whatever. And it's such an odd feeling that all of a sudden you go, oh, I'm not good enough. Or you can feel fine. And then the day changes and you're like, oh, I'm not good enough. And
100%. That is exactly it. I get that all the time.
So how have you addressed that? Do you just kind of just power through or do you just
power through now?
Yeah.
100%. When I'm busy, I think, right, you don't have time to kind of debate. You think I've got orders to get out. I've got people to talk to. I've got emails to do. I've got interviews, meetings, and that kind of helps. I think it just keeps your mind busy. But I am one of those people, I'm a bit of an emotional sponge. So like you said, one thing happens slightly bad or doesn't go to plan, I'm really guilty of thinking, I can't do this. Why did I ever think I could do this? That kind of horrible black cloud in your head. It's always there.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, that unless you've got good coping mechanisms, then that just starts coming more and more often, or, you know, happens more powerfully. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the business started as a result of a coping mechanism, more or less. Is that?
Yeah, it started because I thought it was a load of shit, if I'm honest. I remember my doctor, I was like, oh my God, give me medication. I need medication. He was like, have you tried other things? And I was just like, no, I don't. He said about hobby, and I was like, don't be ridiculous, I can't even lift my head out of bed. Do you know what I mean? I was like, I can't go get in a hobby. And then I've always loved fashion, and when I started getting creative, I love art, I was drawing jewelry. Then I thought, right, try it out, start making. And oh my God, it worked. It helped keep my head straight. It gave me something to work towards, something I felt control of when I had no control about me. And yeah, it was a massive blessing.
Yeah, it's such a strange thing that and I think it's a modern thing where people go, I'll just give me some pills, because you think you want that kind of quick fix to change your brain chemistry, and all of a sudden everything will be wonderful. And you know, for some people that is that can work, but you know, it's weird though. And I've had times before when things have been difficult, and I found that I'm literally coloring in one of my daughter's coloring in books, like I'm coloring in a dinosaur or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
But it's that complete focus on something external, which can just really, it takes you out of your own head, because the stuff in your own head is a load of old bollocks most of the time anyway, isn't it? So it just kind of gets you out of your head and focusing on something else. So the fact it then kind of went to that next level with you, and well, you created something. No one was ever going to buy my dinosaur coloring, but if you've created something, a good product, I mean, and did you just literally go, I've just made these, does anyone want them? Or
It started on my personal Facebook. I literally uploaded a few and said, oh, I've been making these in my spare time, and people were like, oh, can I have one, can I buy one? And it started rolling like that. I was so lucky.
Well, yeah, I have a very strange thing on luck, is that I don't really believe in it, because you might say you're lucky, but you worked really bloody hard to get where you are. And, you know, that bit of jewelry didn't make itself. It came out of your skill.
I know. But I still feel I'm so grateful all the time. Like, I literally, for every order, person I get to meet, get to talk to, I'm just, I think that's probably, like you said, the imposter syndrome again, like thinking, why are these people even giving me the time of day? So I'm like overly grateful about it. It probably is my anxiety and things as well.
It's interesting that back in the day, kind of going back 10 or more years ago, I used to run an eBay shop selling vintage clothing, bit of a difference to what I do. We ended up with over 5,000 feedback or 4,000 feedback. So that was just a proportion of how many sales we made. So for a few years, me and my partner at the time ran this business, and it was amazing. Every leather jacket we sold, every tie we sold, every pair of little Adidas shorts or whatever we sold, it was just like, and you kind of selling and sending to all over the world. And you're thinking, these people are like taking their time, they're taking their money, and they're giving it to me. And it is this kind of odd feeling that you're like, why me out of all of the, because it's not exactly as there's a shortage of people making jewelry with Etsy and, you know, other things. It's not a shortage of people out there. So you go, why me? And well, from an outside point of view, the answer is, as someone who has actually bought from you, it's because the jewelry's really fucking good. So
Thank you. See, I always think, oh, bless him, he's being so nice. It's like, I can't. Yeah, taking a compliment, I'm still working on that.
Yeah, well, you've probably had a lot of practice with it, I would imagine, with everyone's lovely comments and uploading it to the stories and stuff. But now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the last I heard before you were doing jewelry, so I remember like chatting to you before, and you worked at New Look, and then you were doing qualifications for counselling, weren't you?
Yeah. I went and did my counselling course. I got MVQ. I got MVQ 1, 2, and 3 in counselling. And then I wanted to go on and do my degree. And the reason I couldn't do it was because I had no money. So I couldn't afford the course. And then it was literally a month after I started this, I had to make or break. I was kind of like, I had to say to the college whether I was going on board, and I had to turn it down. And I think that brought me really low, because I knew that's what I wanted to be doing. I could not afford it. I was stuck in a job that I loved the people, but I didn't like the job. And when this came about, it just put me back in control again. It made me passionate about something.
It's interesting how, because I think that when, as you go through life and people go through their years, it's often the things which were really hard to take which end up being the making of them. Not always. Yeah. For some people, they sit there for 50 years still bitter about what happened, and you know, and still like blaming people and whatever. But some other people are made of different things and different substance, and ends up being kind of forged in the fire, as they say, or something like that. I mean, do you think that's you?
I think the reason I wanted to go on and do counselling was because how bad I was the year before. I was horrendous. I was awful. before. I was in a really bad way. And I just went through that stage, I think, that everyone goes through when they're suffering with anxiety. No one understands me. I was like, no one gets this. No one feels like I do. Really naive, really stupid, really. I went and saw a counsellor, and it was the classic, I need to do that for other people. I was like, yeah. I want to do that for other people. I understand it. And I was so passionate about it, and I wanted to do it. I really did. I might even go back to it one day. I'm not sure. But I think just getting the word out there that everyone needs to do something they're passionate about will help so many people, because being in a job or in a situation or an environment or a relationship that you're unhappy in, it drowns you without you even knowing it. It's horrible. It's so bad. Like, yeah. For you, without realizing it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. I mean, I think there's so many people who trudge through life.
Yeah.
And
yes, exactly.
I mean, people listening to this will either recognize this themselves or recognize this in other people, that they either complain or they hear people complain about their life, about their situation, about their relationship, about their job, about their finances, about their whatever. And there's actually nothing stopping them from changing that. They just haven't got the belief, or they haven't got the balls, the cojones to just kind of go, you know what? I'm doing this because it's going to make me happy. Even if this earns me less money, I'm going to be happier. Even if I'm single, I'm going to be happier. Like, it's taking those opportunities when they don't even seem like opportunities, which I think is a really powerful, powerful thing to do. You know, your kind of testament to that, I guess.
Yeah, it was never the plan. And then the minute... It honestly, I didn't go out thinking, right, I'm going to start a jewelry business. I started it to help myself. And then when it came about, I thought, yes, this is what I want to do. This is what I need to do. And I noticed the passion there, and it wasn't there in my old job. And it came to that point where I had to pick one or the other. And that was so hard, because I was with New Look for 11 years and it was my safety net. So I was struggling so bad to try and balance both. And then it just got out of hand with Kooky Bloom, so I had to take the leap. And it was the best thing I'd ever done. But even though people were saying to me for so long, do it, leave your job, do Kooky Bloom, I didn't believe in myself enough. It was that ultimatum that made me do it. I had to give up one. I had to, because I couldn't do both. So it went, and I'm so bloody pleased I did. So
I absolutely love your stories that you put out on Instagram. It's you just being 100% you, and it's unedited, and it's just like, you just start something and you're like, oh, the dog's barking, hang on a minute, or whatever, you know.
I worry
yeah, but what I love about it is that when you're doing these stories, is that I've seen you on a few days where you're like, oh God, I'm a bit tired today. But no matter what is going on, the passion is always there. And this is, you know, however many, you're getting on for a couple of years in now, like, and you still got the passion and new ideas coming out all the time. And you keep alluding to big things that are coming later in the year. And so it's obviously just that passion is still just driving you on and on and on, and it's just amazing to see. And I think one of the things that I think is great is that, you know, I was aware that I wasn't sure if it was counseling or psychology, but I knew you were in the headspace where you wanted to help people kind of mentally. And I think that you probably actually are doing that in the fact that you're putting out these stories. You are being very kind of open and saying, oh God, I'm actually feeling pretty anxious right now, because social media is terrible for, oh, this person's life is perfect, this person's making lots of money, everything's perfect. So for you to go to know that you've got a successful business, but at the same time going, what the fuck is going on in my life? showing both sides of, the coin, as it were. Yeah. I think you're so relatable. I think that's one of the reasons that you do so well with it, and people just want to know what's going on with you.
So. I do, yeah. I hope so. I hope people can relate. And I talk to my followers. I know this sounds really cheesy as well, but they're like my friends. They really are. They are amazing followers. And like, And they do say that I'm inspirational, but I say it's not always how it looks. Like other businesses message and say, oh, you know what, you've got thousands of followers and you're getting loads of orders. And I was going, but it doesn't, they, you know, followers aren't customers. They never will be. Do you know what I mean? They follow you on Instagram. At the end of the day, it's a social media site. And although I get up and I come on here and I say I'm excited because I am, it doesn't mean 5 minutes later I'm not throwing a hissy fit or crying. Do you know what I mean? I want people to know that I do, because the most damaging thing I've ever gone through is looking at people all my life and thinking, why don't I look like them? Or why can't I do that? Or why can't I leave the house without having a panic attack? Do you know what I mean? And then comparing has been so bad for me my whole life. So I swore the minute I started an Instagram account, I'd never fake anything. I just won't.
Well, that's exactly what is needed, to be perfectly honest. I never ask a woman her age, but how old do you remind me?
32.
32. So you were about in the era of size zero as a teenager, that kind of,
yes.
So you had all that.
My God, yes.
Yeah. Not Instagram pressure, but front of every woman's magazine.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're above 6 stone, you're a chubber.
Yeah. I know. It was horrendous.
Yeah. So
me and my mum was speaking about it the other day, and I used to buy the magazines and literally read the diets. And I remember really clearly there was one on Victoria Beckham, and she was, I don't know if this is legit, but it was in the magazine that she ate under 600 calories a day. So I did that. I was like, oh, okay, this is what I need to do. And my mom said, I was so tired. I was so ill. I was so moody. I remember my hair used to fall out, but I used to like live on rice cakes. And looking back now, like how dangerous that was. And everyone did it. It weren't just me. I used to go to work and we used to compare with the other girls and say, oh, like, and they used to go, oh, I went over, 600 calories by 30 calories. And everyone would be like, oh. Like stuff like that is dreadful. Like, I'm such a foodie now as well. I love it. And like
blobby donuts.
I'm just so glad that seems to be improving. I think body positivity is definitely improving on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, I agree and disagree. And it's harder for me to kind of judge that because I won't be exposed to the same sort of accounts that a woman will. But on one side of it, you've got a lot more people saying about body positivity. And then on the flip side, you've got a lot of accounts saying, here, buy this slimming pill that's going to give you the shits. It never tells you that's the downside, but it's, it seems to be going both ways. I mean, hopefully I'm wrong and body positivity is more.
Oh, it could just be my age. It could be an age thing. Cause I think I was when you're younger, you just want to look like and be like people. Whereas now I think I'm only just though, at my age now, I'm only just getting to that stage where I think, no, I'm just me and I've got to be me. Do you know what I mean? And I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it took years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the kind of self-acceptance thing of, your height, your frame, your eyes, your, whatever's going on with you. Your baldness, it's the sort of thing you go, well, what, like, and it applies to most things, is what can you actually do about it? Like,
yeah.
And for years you go, well, maybe if I did this, or maybe if I did this, then I would feel better, and then I'd look different, and then I'd be like more attractive. And it's there never is anything. There's never a weight that you're going to achieve that's going to make you feel good. There's never a mirror you're going to look in, on a certain day that's going to make you feel perfect. There's always, even if you achieve one thing, until you've got the right mindset towards it, you're going to find another thing, and then you're going to find another thing, and then you're going to find another thing. Yeah. And it's like chasing your tail.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So, So, I mean, was that like a big impact on you, that kind of site, that size zero thing moving forwards, or what's it?
I'd say it was. I've always been quite conscious about my image. I was very conscious through my teens though about my weight, very for that exact reason, that everyone wants to be very thin with big boobs. And I was kind of average size with no boobs. So it was just like, oh, for God's sake. But again, I've just got to that age now where I'm just happy with the way I am, really.
So has there been like a, because like with your story, I keep coming back to your stories. With your stories, you just, it seems that you go, time to do a story, and you just do it. And you don't, it's not about, oh, I'm going to slap, I have to put my makeup on to do a story, or, you know, I have to have done my hair. It's just like, this is me, I'm going to do it. So how did the evolution take place from the Sophie who seriously gave a fuck about everything to Sophie who gives zero fucks? What was the process? Was it just an age thing, or was it just a generally more happy in life thing? I mean,
maybe. I think it's because maybe it overtook. A good way to look at it is my Instagram. So my personal Instagram, I don't even like going on there anymore, because I remember how it made me feel going on there when you'd post a photo. Like, if you go and look at it, you'll see, like, a couple of years ago, I probably posted a photo of myself every day. Mm. And I've been on there now for nearly 2 years. Like, it's just, and I used to judge myself on how many likes I'd get. So I used to think, oh, I'm looking like, oh, everyone thinks I look really nice because I got over 100 likes. And if I didn't get 100 likes, I used to think, oh my God, I look like shit. Like, and I used to, like, that would be it. No one could tell me I didn't. I'd think, right, well, all these strangers have said that I don't. Even though it wasn't that, it was the way it was going in my head. Mm. And I think coming in Kooky Bloom, it's almost like a bit of a mask, because I'm not there selling me, I'm there selling my product and my story. So I know that my audience and followers are following and me, hopefully, because they like me. They're not on there to say, oh, let's see what Sophie's wearing today or what Sophie looks like. And it's just more comfortable. I could just go on there, I don't worry at all. Whereas, yeah, I used to big time.
No, I think in answering your question, I would strongly suggest that people are buying from you because they like you, as well as liking the jewelry. Because I think if you went on your stories and were just a dick, then I think that like no one wants to buy from someone who's just a straight up idiot. So
I worry.
Well, you know, you're allowed to, but it's refreshing that you know, you can just be that honest about it and go, yeah, I worry.
I think that's important to tell people that you are, because again, there might be someone watching you thinking, well, why can't I do that and do it normally? I want people to know that I do it, but I do it shitting myself. So and it's possible. It's okay to feel frightened or nervous or pissed off about something. It's completely normal.
Yeah. Have you heard the expression do it scared?
No,
it's one of the things that I say to clients sometimes. They go, well, yeah, I've got this presentation coming up work and I'm really anxious about it. I was like, well, do it scared then. Like,
okay.
Everyone has done something in their life where they've had to do something, even if they felt absolutely dreading it. It's one of those things that's like, this is a absolute unavoidable thing. This is something you definitely have to do. Yeah. And then you've had to do it. You know, shitting yourself, you know,
yes,
shaking in your boots or whatever. And so just accepting, you know what, I'm just going to do it scared. It's a way of doing it. It might not be the best way of doing it. I might prefer to do it full of confidence, but that isn't an option, you know, because I'm not there right now. And one of the things I've spoken about in previous podcasts about with regards to confidence is about the fact that people want the confidence before the action. Mm-hmm. Like, if I was this confident, then I would do this. But it's like, no. If you want to be confident, then you have to do the action first. So you have to do the action to earn the confidence. I mean, I feel like confidence is like earned from repetition of doing the thing which you're not confident in. It's a really cruel way that our brains work, but it's like, no, go out and do it, and then I'll reward you with a little dog biscuit of confidence.
Well, I find that with anxiety, I mean my anxiety is okay at the moment, but I got this thing about driving at the moment. Like, I can drive fine for a year and then all of a sudden I'll get an anxiety attack while driving. And it set me back, and I won't drive. I just won't do it because in my head I've said, right, if you get in that car, you're going to have an anxiety attack. But then I kind of say, like you just said, try and say to myself about, right, you're going to go to the shop. You probably are going to get anxious, but you're going to get to the shop and then you're going to get home. Rather than say, right, you're not having, do you know what I mean? You're not tricking yourself. You're just saying, you know what, it's going to be shit, but you need to go to the shop.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'd have there's a strange story from a number of years ago, but I helped someone with driving anxiety, and mm-hmm. it's a really weird situation where I have a car where you don't have to put the key in to turn the ignition on. It's just the key has to be in the car somewhere, you know, and it picks it up. So my partner at the time dropped me off at my office because she needed to have my car. And she drove off. I went to my office to do my day's therapy. And she drove off with the car and then got into the office and was like, I still have the key. Yet she's managed to drive off. And she drove off and went to the supermarket and parked up and went into the shop. And then she came out and called me and was like, I haven't got the key and you can't get here because I'm 3 miles away. So anyway, in the middle of this, or just after this, this client came in with this driving anxiety. And funnily enough, the road which she was most afraid of driving on was the road that I would have to go on to get to the supermarket to give the key to my partner. So, so it was this really kind of coincidental thing. So end of our kind of third session, I think it was, like, well, this is going to sound completely made up, but I'm actually stuck here. And so I'm going to pay for a taxi to get across town because I told her the whole story. So how about you, as an out of therapy exercise, you give me a lift over to Morrison's. And sure enough, she did it. Some relaxation exercises and breathing, and she got through it and the situation was resolved. And I don't think she had therapy with me again. I presume because she felt like it was all sorted, as opposed to thinking, this guy just wants a lift. But it is one of those things. And, you know, when it comes to anxiety, particularly situational anxiety, one of the things is that I say to people to do is to write a list of, like, from 1 to 10 of how anxious something makes you feel. So like, for instance, with driving, if you had to drive to London, that might be a 10 out of 10, but driving five meters down the road would be a 1 out of 10. And then to fill in that from 1 to 10 and then slowly work your way up that list and kind of push that comfort zone out and out and out and out until what was a 5 out of 10 now actually feels like a 1 out of 10. So just, you know, just kind of every day just pushing yourself a little bit outside of it. And also driving when, you know, particularly with driving when you don't need to, just go, you know what, I'm just going to drive somewhere nice and sit and have a sandwich, and then I'm going to drive back again, or a blobby donut, you know, whatever.
always
with the blobby donuts.
Yeah, no problem with eating now.
Well, this that's that's very, very encouraging. So was it always your plan to be so vocal about mental health and anxiety with the Kooky Bloom brand, or was it just something which fell out of your mouth one day when you were doing one of your stories and you didn't stop it?
I think I was honest from the get-go about how I was feeling in my stories, and I noticed a lot of feedback, a lot of people started interacting with that and saying, I can relate to this, I feel the same. Every time I did something or mentioned something on mental health, it would get recognized, and you could tell people want to talk about it, which is amazing. And then I thought about doing a product, so I released mental health bracelets beginning of last year, and raised money for Mind, and they just went crazy because people love the cause so much. It went mad, and we raised thousands of pounds. It went really well, and I said I definitely could do it again. So I think that's what we're going to focus on this year, trying to bring things back to mental health with products as well, not just me waffling about it on my stories. But yeah, it's always been important.
No, I mean, it's it's absolutely fine to waffle about it, because I think like you said, because I mean, when I've had times in my life where it's been dark and, you know, have been really, really struggling, you are in this headspace where you feel like, I am the only person in the world who's feeling this awful right now.
No one
else is thinking about killing themselves. No one else is thinking about this. No one else is thinking about that. I'm the only person thinking it. And it's such an isolated place.
It is. It's horrible.
So, and, you know, particularly with social media being the, you know, minefield, should we say, when it comes to whether what you're seeing is the truth or not, to have someone who is just, could be someone down the road, just go, hey, yeah, I have a really shit time as well sometimes. So you go, oh my God, this is what I needed to hear. Because it's, even if there's no communication, even if people don't feel like they can drop you that message to say, oh, that's exactly how I feel, it's still that sense that you're not alone.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, like, it's like you just said, millions of people suffer in different ways. Everyone's completely different. And I think it's so strange, because when I was really, really at my worst, and I was having panic attacks all the time, and I'd look at other people that I knew had anxiety, and I used to get jealous because they used to be out and about or getting on flights or going to meet their friends. And it's so selfish, but I used to think, why aren't they suffering like me? Do you know what I mean? And I used to think, no one's getting this. And it was horrible. Like, I used to unfollow people. So I just try and be brutally honest. When people say to me, like, about when I went to Vegas and got married, I had people messaging me and going, oh my God, you're insane. Like, that's crazy. And I'm brutally honest. I replied going, the whole time I was drunk and off my tits. Like, I was bad. I was so bad. I was on meds. I was trying to drink and numb it all the time. Like, it wasn't always the pictures you see online. Like, it was a beautiful wedding. Of course it was. But the experiences are not how they come across online, ever. Really?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things with CBT, and you probably may have learned this with what you've done in the past, is that you never know what's going on in someone else's head. Even if they tell you what's going on inside of their head, they could be lying to you. So you never know. That person going on a flight might be mixing their Prozac with gin, you know, just to get through the flight. You know, that you never know how, you know, the person who's glammed up and looking beautiful might be feeling like the most worthless person in the world. So it's that comparison, like you said earlier, is so, so damaging, because no matter what someone looks like, it doesn't ever tell the full story of, you know, how they're really feeling, what's really going on in their life. You're just getting like a snapshot video or a snapshot image of a moment in time. I mean, you said that it was a real problem with you kind of in your teens. I mean, how did you move away from comparing, do you think?
I'd say I still compare now. I'm just aware of it.
Oh, okay.
I still do it on the daily. I do it all the time. If I'm having a really bad day, I notice it more. I think, why is that? Like, when I go back to social media, I look at my account and I think, well, I'm doing this, why aren't I succeeding like them? Or they look like they're really busy, why am I not? Why are they getting these opportunities and I'm not? But I then think, right, so that's probably not how it looks. So I can talk myself down. Whereas few years ago, I couldn't do that. I was like, wow, they're doing really well, I'm doing shit, I give up. Do you know what I mean? Whereas now I think, well, on my good days, I probably look like I'm doing amazing to some people, but, you know, in other areas, things are really bad. So you just got to know the reality of it and realize what you're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really helpful thing for people to hear, probably, that it isn't, you know, even with what looks like amazing success, you're still there going, I'm not good enough. Or, you know, it's not like, if you're starting out with something and you're comparing yourself, then the chances are that you're still going to be doing that comparing yourself even after your 100 millionth sale. Because it's because the problem is not with the business, it's not with the product, it's not with, you know, the problem is, you know, up in your head. And so learning that self-talk, I think, is like the is so important. I mean, one of my favorite quotes is about that the happiness of your life is dependent on the color of your thoughts. Learning to go, well, that's a really shitty color I've got going on in my head right now. Let's get rid of that brown thought and let's have a nice, pretty yellow one, because that's...
It is about recognizing it.
Yeah, one of the things I teach clients, almost every single client I have, is about the importance of that kind of self-talk and how the color of our thoughts kind of controls how happy we are, and taking that horrible brown thought out and placing it with a nice, pretty yellow one, and just scrutinizing the thoughts that you have and go, well, hang on a minute, is that true? How much do I believe that as a percentage? Would I say that to my best friend? You know, these kind of, call them Socratic questions, where you just kind of go, right, here's a thought, let's actually examine it, let's scrutinize it, let's torture it until it reveals whether it's actually true or not, because it's it can be, you know, thoughts control feelings. And if you're saying something horrible to yourself over and over and over and over again, then you're going to feel awful.
Yeah, 100%.
And if that thought isn't true, then you're doing it for no good reason whatsoever other than to hurt yourself. So, it's... I mean, that's one of the key things, like, with anxiety. I mean, with your counselling training, what would you... Because I remember there was a few moments with my cognitive behavioural hypnotherapy training where it was just like a mic drop and you were just like, holy shit. I mean, did you have any moments like that with your training, or were you just like...
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Can you share?
Yeah. There was my teacher. Oh my God, she was brilliant. And I would say her name, but I can't remember it. But I was talking, we have to reflect on our own experiences, and we have to do these little mock sessions, client and blah, blah, blah. And I was talking about a past experience, and I was going, he did this and he made me feel like this, and he said this, so he made me feel blah, blah, blah. And she said, oh, can I stop you there? She went, by the way, no one can make you feel. And I was like, oh. And she was going, no one can make you feel. They can do something that could, obviously, you can make yourself feel sad about it. But you are able to hear something or react to something and think, right, they've said that, but I'm not going to react or let that make me feel this way. And I've never thought of it that before. Never. It was literally like, I was like, oh my God. So going on from then, I took it on board, and I try and do it all the time. And I say it to the boys as well. And like, if someone's actions may be upsetting, but you can choose to not let them upset you, which I thought was just mind blowing. Like, that just changed the way I thought about so much. I was blaming people. Oh, bloody hell. I was blaming people almost. Like, if I was in a bad mood, I was going, well, that's because blah, blah, blah put me in a bad mood. He said this, or someone commented saying that, or my mum did this, did ridiculous things, which is really childish in a way that, I don't know, now looking back, I can just switch that off. If someone says something now, or I see something, I don't blame it. I just say, right, that is upsetting. That's made me feel like this, but I'm not allowing it to, you know, change my mood or make me look at things differently. And it changed everything. I swear by that now.
Yeah, there's an Eleanor Roosevelt quote, which I think is quite often attributed to Cheryl Cole. It definitely wasn't her, or whatever Cheryl, whatever her name is. Yes, an Eleanor Roosevelt quote was just, no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. And it's this beautiful idea of, like, almost permission. It's like, am I going to give that permission to upset me? Am I going to give that permission to change my mood, to spoil my day, to, you know, change my life? It's really quite the most... I remember having a similar type experience with the same thing, of just going, well, yeah, of course. And it's when you hear it spelled out to you, just like, like face palm.
Yes, I know. That's exactly obviously what it was like.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's one of my favorite things about therapy, I think, is when I'm like giving therapy sessions, is saying something and someone just goes, like their jaw kind of almost drops and they just, their brain just goes, well, hang on a minute, you just thrown a spanner in the works there, because for 35 years or however many years, we've been working under this kind of running this program that means X equals whatever. And all of a sudden, yeah, you're telling me that banana equals fish and I don't understand. And yeah, just having this complete moment of clarity almost that things can be or perhaps even should be thought of in an entirely different way to how our brain's been processing them forever.
And it's life-changing. It really is. I know that sounds cheesy, but it is when you come across something like that. It helped me so much doing that training.
Yeah, I mean, one of the thing that kind of right hooked me was about gratitude. And I think that for a long, long time, I was just felt crap about so many things in my life. Why haven't I got this? You know, why am I not more like this? Why am I? And it's one quote that was thrown out at me during a hypnotherapy kind of training session was, do not spoil what you have by desiring what you have not. What you have now was once among that which you desired, which basically says that you've got what you have in your life right now is something you would have killed for at some point. So at any time, you can just kind of go, well, have I been worse off in my life than I am right now? Well, yeah. Well, be thankful you're not there then. But that in itself, that quote, when I heard that, was just like a switch, just like you said, just going, okay.
I love
that. Yeah, I mean, not to say I don't complain and sometimes and get frustrated sometimes, whatever, but it's very easy just going to turn back to it and go, well, actually, I've got a roof over my head, you know, it's warm, you know, I've got running water.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got, and just kind of taking it back to the most kind of minor details of things to be grateful for, as well as, you know, being alive, not being in hospital, not whatever. Just that for me was one of the biggest wake-up calls that I had. It was, yeah, like you said, it sounds cheesy, but it maybe it is, and I don't give a fuck if it is, but it literally was life-changing for me. It just completely, like, on that moment, just like flipped my perspective on how to view stuff. And then from day on, that since then, I've been kind of preaching about gratitude and being grateful and how to achieve that.
Yeah. And it's positive, isn't it? Filling your head with positivity. Law of attraction and all that.
Well, I won't. I'm not a strong believer of the law of attraction, to be honest.
No.
But you know,
I love it.
You know, and this is the thing: is that if things work for you, they work for you, and you know that's fine. But I don't think. Well, my thing is, and is that I hate toxic positivity. That's my thing. That like someone's going through something terrible, oh, everything will be okay. Well, will it?
Yeah,
like will it? Because my family member's just been in a horrific car accident and I don't know if they're going to make it or not. So just throwing out everything will be okay, not so much. So my thing is, don't complain. Like, you don't have to be positive, but you just have to not complain, even to yourself, you know. And so that's not to say you don't talk about your problems, but you talk about them in a kind of solution focused way. So you talk about them. So you don't just meet up with your friend and go, nah, 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 and just like complain about everything that's going on in your life. You go, well, I'm having a problem with such and such at the moment. And I just don't really know how to do it. I don't know how to blah blah blah, and you try and find a solution. And if you find yourself complaining, you go, actually, you know what, I'm just whinging like a little bitch, which doesn't help anyone, you know. It makes the person you're talking to just go, doesn't help anyone. So yeah, I'm positivity is fine, but not complaining is my that's my jam.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, how does that sound to you as someone who says?
I don't know. So I'm very like, I don't know. I think it's really important to feel the moment. If you're going through something, you need to feel it. Like what you said, it's not a case of going, it's going to be okay. Because I don't say that to anyone. If they say, oh, I feel like this, I just go, it's so shit. I just go, yeah, it is. It's really shit. You just got to get by. It's not easy. You can't always. Sometimes when you're feeling really low, you don't want someone all fluffy and fairy like coming over telling you it's all going to be lovely. You want someone to go, you know what, this is really crap, and it's completely normal that you feel like that. And then you're like, oh good, there you go, someone said it.
That is one of the biggest things that I don't think has ever come up that much when I've been speaking to people, is the normalization of feeling shit when something shit happens. Oh, so your partner just walked out on you. Yeah, it's okay to be crying nonstop for a couple of weeks because you've had your life turned upside down.
Yeah.
You know, you've just lost all your money somehow. You've just, you know, had something terrible happen to you. Yes, feel crap. Feel crap. Yeah. Because that's what you're supposed to do. It would be weird if you didn't feel crap. And that's why toxic positivity kind of grates me, because it's just like you're allowed to and you're supposed to feel a bit rubbish sometimes. And I did a podcast a while ago on why suffering is actually necessary. So I won't dive into that because I'll just be repeating what I said before. But if you're listening to this and you're interested in that, then do check out that episode not so long ago. But the bottom line being that, have you seen The Good Place, the series on Netflix? So it's all about like the afterlife and the heaven and hell, and at some point in the story they find the good place, and it's everyone from history who'd expect to be in kind of heaven or the good place. It is there, and they've been there since they died, so they've been there for thousands of years. And okay. You know, they can have anything they want at any given moment, and just go, I want to score the winning goal in a World Cup final, or nothing like that, but whatever you want, you've got it straight away, boom, done.
Yeah.
And they are bored. They are just bored and bored and bored. Like everyone's there, just so bored because there's no contrast, because it's the times when you've got through really, really hard stuff that's that makes the reward that much more amazing.
100%. Yeah. I wouldn't change any of the bad things that have ever happened to me because of that exact thing.
Exactly. And this is like, I sort of wouldn't go into it too much, but that's basically it. That the contrast that the bad times provides is quite something. And if you can learn to be resilient and not look forward to the bad times, but just fully accept that there are going to be them and be prepared for them, then the good times that inevitably will come along as well are going to seem that much better. You're just such the perfect example of this, of that, you can probably almost, maybe you've even got it in your diary to the day. Remember the day you went into the doctors and went, I'm so messed up right now. Just give me some drugs which stop me feeling like this.
Yeah.
And that was probably a pretty horrendous day, because I've had those days where you go to the doctor and go, my brain is broken. Please fix me.
Oh, God. Yeah. Exactly. I wish it was just one day. I was there every week. And I was going, these aren't working. They were going, you need to give it time. I was going, I don't have time. I couldn't. It was so scary. It was so horrible. But I know people go through it. And that's why I feel for people so much now. I really do. Because even though I feel better, it was that traumatizing at the time that I hadn't forgot it. Mm. Whereas years ago, I first got anxiety and panic attacks when I was about the age of 18. And then I didn't have one for about 5 years. So I think I did genuinely forget how bad they were. And then when it came back, I was like, oh my God. And it didn't leave. And it was just there. And yeah, I'm waffling again. I just went off into my own little world there. I forgot my point. I completely forgot my point there. Sorry.
Well, it wouldn't be an interview with you if you didn't forget your point at some point. So
no, I know, I do it all the time.
Yeah, but we were talking about the contrast of it. So you were kind of saying how bad it was, and how it wasn't just one off occasion. It was like a frequent thing. So contrasting that to, I mean, if you'd been in that moment and you could visit yourself from where you are right now and go, like, I know you feel really shit, but by the way, in 2 years or however long it's been now, in 2 years, you're going to be running a business which is loved by thousands, is successful, and has paid for my kids to go to Disneyland or Disney World. I always get the two confused.
I wouldn't have believed it. Yeah. I wouldn't have believed it, because I think that's what the frame of mind you're in. I got to that bit. I got to that stage and I just thought, right, this is just who I am. Do you know what I mean? You just think, this is me. I'm not going to be able to go out. I'm not going to be able to live a certain way without anxiety and panic attacks. But I was obsessed. I was obsessed with how I felt. I was Googling things. I was reading books. I couldn't do anything without thinking, oh, you're doing all right. You're doing all right. You're doing all right. You walked out in the kitchen. You're all right. Do you know what I mean? So you almost cause it in your head because your life revolves around it. So of course it's going to flare up because it's the only thing that's in your head all the time.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like living in a house with a smoke detector in each room, and you know, any one of those smoke detectors can go off. And the problem is that you've got too many smoke detectors. Because you go, well, actually, is my stomach feeling all right now? What about the thoughts that are going in my head? Are my palms sweaty? Is my breathing okay? Yeah. Is my heart, you know, you're just monitoring all of it. And then, like you said, when you're feeling that, there's a part of you kind of going, well, is this normal? Is this normal? Is this normal? And then you want to research it, because you want to go, well, is this my heart beating a bit faster, or am I 2 minutes from a heart attack?
That's exactly what I was like.
It's unfortunately fairly common. And if anyone's listening to this and that is you right now, please do not Google your symptoms. No one has ever felt better from Googling their symptoms.
No,
because never. Because you go into it in the frame of mind of, I want to look for something wrong. Like, so if there was an answer that said, you're fine, you wouldn't believe it anyway. So there's, there is a whole podcast episode on health anxiety. So if that is you, then do check out that episode. I'll put a link in the show notes for that one. With the jewelry making, mm-hmm. how long was it between thinking, oh my God, this is the most ridiculous suggestion, to this is helping? Are we talking days, weeks, months?
A couple of weeks I was making it without showing anyone. So I was literally doing it at home and it was making me feel better. And it wasn't until I got better at it that I thought, oh, I'm going to put these online. I was literally showing my family and friends. It was a personal Facebook. And then people wanted them. And like I mentioned earlier, I really wanted the money for my counselling degree. So I wanted to get as much money as I could. But then the pandemic, so Matt lost his job and we were just surviving on my wages. And it was just like, I don't know. And I still, even at that point, wasn't thinking I need this to make money. I was just doing it to help myself, and it just happened to start making money. And then it got to the point where I was making more money with Kooky Bloom than I was my job. And then, the scales were weighed up and it was the right thing to do to take it full time. And it just went crazy.
So within a couple of weeks, your anxiety felt better just from making jewelry.
I'd say I felt better, as in I had something else to think about.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think I'll always have anxiety, and I think I'm not okay with that. It sucks, but I will live with that. Do you know what I mean? And this is a good place for me. Like, and I've been so much worse that, like you said, those bad times make me grateful. Even though now isn't ideal, I still get anxiety. It's bloody 1,000 times better than it was. So that makes me super grateful and able to manage it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So just kind of finishing off, because we've spoken a lot about mental health and the jewelry side of Kooky Bloom. Can you tell, I mean, you said there's plans for the future. Can you share any of that at all, or is it top secret?
We're hoping to go in. I'm hoping to do some more products around mental health. And we're starting to work with a few more brands and hoping to get ourselves out there slightly. But I literally can't tell you about that yet.
Oh, it's
I'm sorry. I really, yeah.
It's absolutely fine. And I think that I think that you're the sort of person where anyone who gets on board with what you're all about is just rooting for you. Like, they're just, everyone just wants you to just do great because of everything surrounding the quality of the jewelry, for one, but the openness and you just being you, and because that's refreshing. So I think everyone's just rooting for you. So, I mean, even as a guy, you know, I look at that and go, oh, that's cool. And when my daughters are of an age where they're going to appreciate them a bit more, I will be becoming a more regular customer for sure. So just to finish off, could you tell the listeners, if they're not already aware, how they can find everything they need to know about Kooky Bloom and where they can buy stuff and how it all works?
Ah, okay. Well, we're on Instagram at Kooky Bloom. I got it bloody wrong.
Don't send them to the wrong place.
Oh, for God's sake. Right. So we're on Instagram at Kooky_Bloom. And our website is www.kookybloom.com. Or you can find us on Not on the High Street.
Wonderful stuff. I will put links to all of that in the show notes, so it would only just be a click away from anyone listening anyway. But I think that just remains to say thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a genuine pleasure finding out all about you know, how it's all happened, you know, your success, your struggles, and I think that people will have really, really enjoyed it. So thank you so much for joining me.
No worries. Thank you.
Head to gistcoaching.co.uk to read blogs, get in touch, or find out more about working directly with Chris to get your shit together. To follow us on social media, search for Gist Life Coaching. Enjoyed today's episode? Then give us a rating and hit subscribe.